verses, not just in this letter, but in any of the New Testament epistles. They're difficult to read, they're difficult to engage with. So let's take our courage in both hands then, turn to Romans and the first chapter, and we'll read from verse 18. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness, because what may be known of God is manifest in them, for God is the one who has shown it to them. Now, since the creation of the world, God's invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made. Even God's eternal power and Godhead, so that everyone is without excuse. Because although they knew God, they did not glorify him as God, nor were thankful, but became futile in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools, and changed the glory of the incorruptible God into an image made like corruptible man, or birds, or four-footed animals, or creeping things. Therefore, God has also gave them up to uncleanness in the lusts of their hearts to dishonor their bodies among themselves, who exchanged the truth of God for the lie and worshipped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. For this reason, God gave them up to vile passions, for even their women exchanged the natural use for what is against nature. Likewise, also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust for one another, men with men committing what is shameful, and receiving in themselves the penalty of their error, which was due. Now, even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a debased mind, to do those things which are not fitting, being filled with all unrighteousness, sexual immorality, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, evil-mindedness, whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, violent, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, undiscerning, untrustworthy, unloving, unforgiving, unmerciful, who, knowing the righteous judgment of God, that those who practice such things are deserving of death, not only do the same, but also approve of those who practice them. So, difficult passage then. If you turn to verses 16 and 17, these two verses are our text and supply us with our theme. Verses 16 and 17. For I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God to salvation for everyone who believes, for the Jew first, and also for the Greek. For in the gospel, the righteousness of God is revealed from faith to faith. As it is written, the just shall live by faith. Let's ask God then to bless our time together here. Lord, so we're going to think again then about the gospel. And as we did this morning, I'll begin with a recap. And what we are seeing here in Romans and the first chapter is that the gospel is the gospel of God. If you look at the very first verse of the very first chapter, here is Paul setting things out very clearly that he has been called by God to bring the gospel of God to men and women. And it's very important that whenever we think of the gospel, we think of it as the gospel of God. It is his message, and as I've said to you before, and it's important to repeat, this gospel is the only message that God has for our world, and it is the only message that he has ever had. And this message centers on the person of his Son, Jesus Christ. The message from God does not center upon the creature. We've just read from Romans 1 how men worship the creature rather than the creator. So the heart of the gospel is not the creature. The heart of the gospel is not man, it's not woman, it's not the planet, it's not society. All such message delivered by religious people are aberrations, distortions of the gospel. The gospel is the message from the creator, and it is the message concerning his Son, Jesus Christ. So do you remember the first night we looked at this? We saw that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, and then as the Son of God, he became man. He was born royal, do you remember, of the line of David, and he came and he lived among us, and then he died and was raised with power by the Holy Spirit. It's the Son of God, Jesus Christ, who stands center stage in this message of the gospel. Now, in these opening verses, Paul says very clearly that he is longing to go to the church at Rome, that he might preach the gospel to those who are in Rome, to those who are in the church. He wants to preach the gospel to those who've come to faith in Jesus Christ. And Paul wants to do this because as he preaches the gospel to them, the power of God is at work saving those who have been called to faith in Jesus Christ. So this message is a message in which the power of God is on display at work whenever this message is proclaimed. So there is God present in that message, saving those who are hearers and believers. I said to you last week and the week before, I think, where do you think God sends those who preach the gospel? Where does he send them? Now, the answer from Romans is God sends preachers of the gospel to the churches. They go to the churches that they might preach the gospel. And in a very wonderful way, when you have a preacher of the gospel in the church and that gospel is proclaimed, God works to save. And part of God's saving work is to draw people that they might share that message being proclaimed amongst his people. And that's what you and I are longing for. So this message then, it's a message that saves, and we thought together about what salvation means. Verse 17 of chapter 1, we thought last week about this idea of righteousness. And it's a declaration of how right God is. When the gospel is preached, we have a clear statement about the rightness and the justice and the glory and the majesty of our God. God stands in the message and demonstrates to us how good and how just he is in saving men and women from their sins. Well, I want to turn tonight again to verse 17. And I want to think further about this idea of the righteousness of God. And I suspect that it won't be just tonight, but maybe next week and the week after, we are going to continue to think about how the gospel reveals the righteousness of God, how right God is. And what I want us to do tonight is this. If you look at verse 17, you read there these words, "For in the gospel, the righteousness of God is revealed." And then when you go to verse 17, verse 18, what do you notice? You notice in verse 18, "For the wrath of God is revealed." So we have two statements about how the gospel message reveals. The gospel message firstly reveals the wrath of God, and then the gospel message reveals the righteousness of God. And when the gospel is preached, both must be emphasized. The faithful preacher will tell you that the wrath of God, he will declare it, proclaim it, elaborate it. The wrath of God revealed in this message. And then what the preacher will do is he will then talk about how the rightness of God is revealed when this gospel message is preached. So we are going to take a deep breath, everyone, and I want us to think very clearly tonight about the wrath of God. And what I want you to do in Romans 1 with me is I want you to see, first of all, something that we touched on last week, and that is the reason for the wrath of God. So if you have your Bibles there, I want you to look from verse 18, and I want you to go down as far as verse 23. And in these verses, what you have is the rationale for the wrath of God. And then as you go further into the chapter, you see two results of the wrath of God. So you have the reason for the wrath, and then you have what the wrath of God does, how the wrath of God is revealed, how it works. Because it's not just the case that the preacher talks about the wrath of God. What the preacher does when he preaches the gospel is he demonstrates for you that the wrath of God is something that is at work that has consequences in the lives of men and women everywhere. The preacher will show you how the wrath of God is revealed in reality, in everyday experience, in men and women's lives. So will you look with me then at chapter 1? And what you see from verse 24 is the word therefore. Do you see it there? The verse opens, therefore God also gave them up to uncleanness. And what you have here is this: the wrath of God affects human relationships. The wrath of God is seen in the way human beings conduct their relationships. It has an impact upon family life, friendships, work colleagues. It works itself out in the relationships that men and women have. So from that verse, Paul will talk to you about the wrath of God at work in the relationships of men and women. And then if you look at verse 28, and what you get in verse 28 is the similar word. Therefore, even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a debased mind. Now, do you see the second result of wrath? The result of the wrath of God is at work in the self, in the human person. The wrath of God works in the minds of men and women. It starts to have an effect on the thinking and the understanding of human minds, so that the mind of the person who is under the wrath of God starts to become a darkened place. The mind starts to not work aright. And so the self, the individual, begins to experience the wrath of God in his or her own person. Now that's what you have in Romans 1, and this is the gospel message. And what I want us to do, as we share this message about the wrath of God, what I want us to be able to notice is the power of God that is on display as we listen to the gospel. It is the power of God in relation to his wrath. And as we sit here on a Sunday night, and as we think about our families and our neighbours and our fellow countrymen, it's the prayer that God's power would so impress itself upon us that we would see afresh, that we would see anew this sense of the wrath of God that is at work in the lives of those who are around us, those whom we love. Its effects are there to be seen and felt and noticed in the lives of those we love and we live with and we work amongst. It's that impression upon us that the power of God makes when we hear that gospel in a place like this, so that we then, under that deep impression of the power of God and his wrath, turn to this God and start to plead with him for those who are under his wrath, that this righteous God might righteously rescue them and save them by bringing them to Christ. I think one of the things that worries me is the lack of feeling, my own lack of feeling. Maybe it's because for a long time now, the subject of the wrath of God has been put to one side in the church. We've not wanted to engage with it. We've not wanted it to be preached. We've wanted to come together with this sense of our own weakness and our own problems and our own struggles and our own needs and our own weaknesses. We want to hear a word for us to make us feel better, to enable us to cope and face with the struggles that we've got. We've made it all about us. So we've come together with us at the center of what it is that we are doing, hoping we leave feeling better than when we came. And that's right. But one of the dangers of that is that we are not listening any longer to the idea of wrath. And we lose sight of this tremendous truth that men and women are children of wrath, just as we once were. Think of Ephesians 2. You who were once children of wrath, just like the others, God who is rich in mercy has loved us and saved us. Now we were once like that and we've been saved. But we lose sight of and we fail to be impressed by and moved by the wrath of God that remains on men and women. So very quickly then, let's look at these things in chapter 1. What's the reason for the wrath of God? Well, think back to last week. We talked about how every human being has a knowledge of God. That knowledge we saw is evident in creation. That knowledge is evident in the conscience. So every human being has this knowledge. And we read from chapter 1, God has made it clear to them, even from the beginning, the eternal attributes of God, his eternal power, his godness. It's all been clear. It's been made known so that no one is without excuse. This knowledge of God is a great internal reality for all human beings made in the image of God. And then Paul spells out for you in those verses how that knowledge that everyone has, you don't sit a baby down and say, do you know there's something called God? God, people know. But what is at work is this principle of distortion, taking that knowledge, rejecting it, altering it, reshaping it, remodeling it, redesigning it, if you wish, how the individual will take what they have been given by God concerning himself and destroy it, overwhelm it, so that they might then construct a God that sits with their own thoughts and their own desires and their own wishes, that is a representation of what he or she wishes God to be, making him in their likeness. That principle is at work in the heart and the mind of every person who exists today and who has ever existed. Now, let me reinforce what I'm saying to you. You see it very clearly in these verses. Verse 20. Since the creation of the world, so since our very first parents, God's invisible attributes are clearly seen and they're recognized by everything. His Godhead, his eternal power. This knowledge is there plainly for all to see. And then you get to verse 21. Here's the reason for God's wrath. Although they know this to be God, they do not glorify him as God, nor are they thankful to him as God. But here it is, this idea of darkening the knowledge of God that they have, and then remodeling and reshaping it according to their own desires. You see it there, verse 22. Verse 22 is one of the most amazing verses. We live in a culture that considers itself wise. We're scientific, aren't we? We're atomic, we're technological, we're so advanced. You think of what is possible today in medicine and so on. And we give thanks to God for all of that. But it's this fundamental position in the hearts and minds of all men and women that we are wise to reject the knowledge of God that we were born with, that comes to us through creation and through conscience. And so professing themselves to be wise, claiming how mature it is to reject this idea of God, the judgment of God is that they become fools. And then you can see verse 23, they change this glorious revelation of God, this knowledge of the greatness and wonder of God into an idol. Let's create a new God. And so what Paul spells out for us is how this then results in the wrath of God being revealed from heaven. And then that wrath is God's response to this rejection that lies in the hearts and minds of men and women everywhere. Let me just say again, if I can, those you and I love, those you and I have brought to this place, why are they here tonight? Because they've rejected. They have rejected the knowledge of God that a sermon brought them, that creation speaks to them about, that their own conscience bears witness to. They have rejected this. And the rejection is a deliberate conscious act against this God. And so the wrath of God is now revealed and it sits on there and it begins to manifest itself and work itself out in, first of all, as we've seen, their relationships. So this is the first evidence of the wrath of God. A distortion in relationship. Now, if you bear with me, let's read those verses again. So, verse 24, down to verse 27. Here's this idea of relationship. God also gave them up to uncleanness in the lusts of their hearts to dishonor their bodies among themselves. These who exchanged the truth of God for the lie, they worshipped and served the creature rather than the creator. God, verse 26, gives them up to vile passions, women and women, men and men. Now, before we all get very excited, let me just make it very clear here that Paul isn't simply talking about homosexuality. Paul is telling us this. In the purposes of God, God created man and woman. In the purposes of God, he made them in his image, and God set them together in relationship. And that relationship is a mirror of, a reflection of, The relationship between Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. What you saw between two humans mirrored perfectly what was there for all eternity in the Trinity. And God's purpose was for men and women to live in relationship that reflects the relationship within the Trinity. And what has happened since the rejection by Adam and Eve of the revelation of God, it's the human relationship that is now broken. The whole way of relating to each other is now being under the wrath of God. His wrath works itself out through the relationship. So don't reduce it simply to an issue of gay sex. That's not what we have here. We are seeing all human relationships. We saw Eve blame the serpent. We saw Adam blame Eve. We saw Cain murdering his brother. All human relationships now are subject to the working out of the wrath of God. So they're not what they should be. And relationships within family, within neighborhoods and communities, between nations, all such relationships where the rejection of God is taking place are subject to the wrath of God. And so when you come to Jesus Christ and the salvation that God offers humanity in the person of Jesus Christ, what do you see? And you see the restoration of relationship. The relationship with God is restored first. Through faith in Jesus Christ, we become brothers and sisters of one another. So human relationships are then healed and restored and nurtured. The idea of fellowship takes root in the church, and we learn to love one another and forgive one another. And those relationships in the church begin to mirror the person of Jesus Christ and his relationship with God. So it's relational then. And when we see, as we may well be seeing, family breakdown, societal breakdown, we are seeing the wrath of God at work. And those terrible lists in Romans 1, those lists about children and their parents, and parents and their children, and you see how this list of doing what is right in your own eyes, all of this is the wrath of God being revealed. So you can see relationships then. And then look with me at verse 28 and following. Now, these aren't neat divisions. They overlap one another. But nonetheless, these are very real distinctions. Verse 28. Even as they did not, or therefore, because they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God has given them over. There's an expression that captures the wrath of God at work. God gives them over individually to a debased mind, a darkened mind, a mind that no longer recognizes the truth of God. It's a mind that no longer recognizes the truth of itself, who the person is. What's true about this person? How this person is made in the image of God? That's darkened. How God's purpose for this individual is now lost because the mind has been given over by God to a debased condition. That's what the wrath of God looks like at work in the individual. God has given them over to a debased mind to do those things which are not fitting. And then you get, don't you, verse 29, being filled with all unrighteousness. Use that word again. The gospel proclaims the righteousness of God. And then God in his righteousness reveals his wrath, and men and women are filled with all unrighteousness, all that lies within the dark corners of the human heart because of sin, comes to the surface, works itself out, and we are seeing men and women with darkness in their minds. living their lives, giving themselves up. That's what Paul talks about, how the life that is then lived reflects the darkness that is in the mind and the heart of that individual. Now, here is the wrath of God at work. And Paul will go on in chapter 1 to discuss how in our everyday life we work out the darkness that is in our own mind and in our own heart. And that darkness is then on display for everyone to see, and others see it and they approve of it. Rather than calling it out, they say, "Well done, that's the way to live your life. You're our hero. We look at you and we think you're wonderful," because we too are working out the darkness in our own minds, in the way that we live. And that's the reality, says Paul, that the gospel lays out for us all to see. The wrath of God revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men. So what do we think? Do we feel the reality of the wrath of God? Do you feel yourself to be someone who is observing it at work, in the relationships that you see around you, maybe those you love? Are you seeing it in the minds and the hearts of individual men and women whose minds just seem to be filled with all forms of darkness, living it out? Now, the gospel doesn't say that people are terrible, that people can't do good things. The gospel doesn't say that. The gospel is this proclamation of how men and women reject God and what the consequences of that are. In all other respects, the gospel acknowledges the good that men and women do. But our message is to bring this gospel to the church, that we might hear it, feel its power, that we might engage with it, that we might be moved by it, to pray to our God, who is righteous in all that he does. So let's end like this then, with this reality of wrath. Is God able to save? Can God take someone who has rejected that knowledge that they had through conscience? Can God take that person then whose relationships are fractured and whose mind is dark? Well, you know as well as I do that the gospel is a proclamation that God's power is able to take such a person and is able to save them. And God is able to save them by bringing them to Jesus Christ and giving them faith to believe in Jesus Christ, so that that person who was once under the wrath and the judgment of God has been delivered by God through the person of his Son, Jesus Christ. So the gospel celebrates how God saves men and women, not because they're creatures and the world's all about them. God doesn't save them because they're unhappy, or they take drugs, or they are drunkards, or whatever it is. God doesn't save them from human misery and human dissatisfaction. God saves them from his wrath, which is what they deserve. And if you notice, so many buildings that say they're churches, Christian churches, will display the Christian message in terms of the person, the creature, as you see in these verses. They worship the creature rather than the creator. And I make it my business to notice how many churches on their placards and their billboards will appeal to the creature. What's your life like? How happy are you? How good is your marriage? How good are you as a parent? How happy are you in yourself? And this message is all about the creature. And it presents God to them as somebody who wants to make them happier or wants to rescue them from their mistakes. That is not what the gospel is. It is this declaration that our righteous God can righteously deliver you from his wrath, which we rightly deserve because we've rejected God. And God can bring us to his Son, Jesus Christ. And his Son, who, born of a woman according to the seed of David, declared to be the Son of God with power through the resurrection of the dead. God brings us to his Son. And then in faith and belief and repentance, this God saves us from his wrath. And that work, as we've seen, is ongoing. God continues to save us because we continue to sin. We continue not to hear the truth of God. We continue to distort what we've learned about it. So God continues to save us by renewing us when we meet together through the person of his Son. Let's end tonight by looking at Romans and chapter 3. And what I'm really hoping for is that we get to these verses as soon as we can. Because what Paul has laid out in chapter 1 and chapter 2 and in chapter 3 as far as verse 20, he's laid out this terrifying subject of the wrath of God. It rests upon the Gentiles. It rests upon the Jews. It rests upon us all, whoever we are. The righteousness of God, his wrath rather, rests upon us because all have sinned and fallen short of his glory. Verse 21 then. But now, says Paul, now in the gospel, the righteousness of God, apart from the law, is revealed, being witnessed by the law and the prophets, even the righteousness of God, which is through faith in Jesus Christ, to everyone and for everyone who believes. For there is no difference. So we'll end with this idea then, that the gospel reveals the righteousness of God, how right God is, and how God then, in the message of the gospel, he offers righteousness to men and women who've sinned and who are under his wrath. God hands out freely and gladly to men and women this righteousness which they can have, a righteousness which is offered to them in Jesus Christ. And it's through faith in that Christ that God gives righteousness to men and women. Just as he is right, he makes us right. And he makes us right through faith in his Son. We become right through faith in his Son. And God regards us as right through faith in his Son. So let's close with verse 26. God demonstrates at the present time his righteousness, how just God is, that he is just and the justifier, the one who makes righteous the person who believes, the person who has faith in Jesus Christ. Are you someone then with faith in Jesus Christ? God has made us righteous. God has justified us. God continues to justify us. He continues to regard us as righteous. And when we come together, hear this gospel, hear about his Son, we are celebrating together how we have been rescued from wrath and how we have been made righteous through the person of his Son. And it's all God's work. It's all of him. And so we say, don't we, to him is all the glory. Let's turn to our green hymn book.